CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody.
Yes,
it's all happening. It's all Thursday's package of goodies for you. And because it's Thursday, we have Pumi Mashiho. We've missed you. I think it was last week we didn't have you here, Pums. And I mean, it was just crap. It was really crap without you. So I'm very glad that you're back.
Oh.
Yeah, truth is, I hadn't finished doing my hair.
Is that all it was? Okay, well, now we know. So don't forget, because it's Thursday, we have the burning in Tlemaza later. The burning platform.
It's a name I haven't heard of in a while, and I'm not mad I haven't heard of in a while.
The burning in Tlemaza. Whatever, did he ever go to prison? I can't even remember. I don't think he did. I think he's probably living large. Of course, this is the land of no consequence, so I wouldn't be surprised if Bernie Tlemaza is in charge of something again. You know, they tell people, they say to people, don't worry, comrade, just go and keep a low profile for a couple of months and they'll forget you exist. Right?
Dude. Because haven't we forgotten about the very much alive Shabir Sheikh?
Exactly. Exactly. You can be a bad, bad, bad person. You can have done terrible things. Even by your own admission, you can have done terrible things. And then let you stew for a little bit. People forget about you. And you suddenly come back and you're like the municipal manager of, I don't know, some terrible little town in the middle of nowhere. And you're earning big money again. It's great.
Mm. No, but you know what's good about Shabir?
Yes.
Is he actually has stayed out and away from everybody. You know, he's gone quietly to the golf course. Unlike some people who just have no shame and no remorse, so out here in the streets, whether they're tweeting crazy or they're like, he's just gone, okay, you know what? Well, I'm just going to sit this one out.
It depends where you're looking for him. Mm. There is, his brother owns a restaurant in Durban. It's like it's a fast food joint. And supposedly, if you're really looking for him, you can find him there every so often. This is Shabir Sheikh, just chilling there.
That's my point. Yeah. If you're looking for him, he's not in your faces.
And as of this 2018 article, Burning in Tlemaza, and that's burning with an E, not a U.
Yes.
Bernie Sanders.
Burning Tlemaza, yes. He now owns a private investigation and security company.
Oh, is that what he does now? And I wonder who would hire him. Like, that's a really interesting proposition. What are you protecting that you need Burning in Tlemaza? Let me ask you a tip.
No, but he's also doing investigations.
Yes.
And
I'll bet.
He's got the skill. He's got the skill for that one.
His company is called I2Care, and according to the registration documents, it's registered in Lone Hill in Johannesburg.
Oh, okay. That's great. Mm.
What is it called? I with the dot or like?
I2Care. I-T-U-Care. And then his quote around it, he says,
"Itukay."
What if it's Idu? What if it's Idu? Like Idu Meleng?
I think it is. I think it is. Really?
I too care.
He says, "I'm an investigator. And those who thought it was the end of me when I was removed from the Hawks will be surprised. I have many years' experience in the detective service and will continue with investigations in my private capacity."
Well, thanks
Dude,
for thanks the updates.
There are many people out there.
He's out there making some
there
money.
There are many people out there looking for somebody to like follow their wife that they think is cheating with their best friend. That's who those like investigators become.
That's where our
taking
friend...
photos. That shit is a real thing.
Do you think is that really big in South Africa for the common man?
Huge.
Ask the divorce lawyers.
There are people who would spend half their money just checking on that stuff.
That's the divorce lawyers.
Sure. Yeah, the divorce lawyers, they use that stuff, hey, to nail each other in court and to get maintenance one-ups on each other and that kind of thing.
And to get, because people try and hide money. People, you need an investigator, yo.
No, exactly.
I wish I was Bernie Madoff's ex. Do you know how I would be living in that house he's left in the south of France? That's what I'd be doing right now.
Do you really wish one of the you were, though?
Only one of the, any one of the four properties he owns. What? The man's dead. You want to be his ex?
What does he have to share with anyone?
Because I don't know if I'd want.
Isn't everything he owns just going to pay off his debts?
Didn't his kids have all either committed suicide or they've? It's just a horrible. No, it's a horrible story. I mean, listen, he brought such misery. He brought such misery to his family.
Shame.
And you know what? This is all where greed.
Shame.
Greed comes into it. You know, I heard some stories yesterday. Separately from people I know about how there are so many people who are like they're in a bad financial situation, so they kill themselves. And you know, I've thought about how tough former generations of South Africans were, and how many of them didn't have a lot of money. You think about all the people during the struggle. You think about people who went off to fight World War II. You think these are people who really came back to a lot of deprivation. They didn't have a lot of money. Money was not the central reason for them to they could survive. I mean, they had enough to kind of to buy rationed food or to and seriously, not a lot. You know, nothing fancy. They were eating maybe the same thing every single night and pup or whatever was cheapest at that time. But they survived. And if money was
rice and beans.
And if money was tight, then you know, money was tight, but you don't abandon your family. You don't quit life. And you see these people who've lived this. In the one case that I heard yesterday, this one girl, her dad had a lot of money, and he made some bad deal, and he lost half of what he had, which was still a significant amount of money. And she was so upset that they were, in inverted commas, poor, that she tried to kill herself. You know, to me, that's like such a weak reason. There must have been other complications because I can't imagine someone would make that decision rationally. But, you know, like we've become so materialistic that like so you can't have your house in Camps Bay, so you know you must kill yourself, you know. No strength, no ability to push through, no ability to try and survive, and certainly no response to the people around you who might be really hurt by something like that. Unbelievable. People have got so... We're paper thin now. We're so weak. I mean, it's like, you know, marriage. People, the minute the marriage is not feeling 100%, they're like, oh, well, I'll just take a divorce. I mean, there obviously are marriages that you need to get out of. But like these days, it's so easy. It's so like, it's consumer culture. It's takeaways. It's quick, fast food. It's let's get in, let's get out. The moment things don't totally suit people, they just give up on them. And that includes life.
Have you seen the video of Jackie Chan that's been making the rounds?
No.
Now that he's
Yes.
What is that?
He made an announcement that he's leaving all his money. Mm-hmm. When he dies, he's leaving all his money to charity, nothing to his son.
Good.
And his reasoning is, if his son has the ability, could make his own money. If he doesn't have the ability to make his own money, he'll just be wasting the money he made. So he's just like, well, I will enjoy the life that I built for myself. He can do the same thing. Oh, the internet went crazy. And then there was a video making the rounds of Jackie Chan on a TV show. I don't know what the TV show was, but he was talking about how when they moved to America, the change that happened in his son. He's just like,
really?
This guy can't even stand still and talk to you.
Really?
When I was his age, talking to my dad, you know, older people, you stand up, you bow,
right?
You know,
yeah.
It's just like, this is just scratching his balls. It makes this
didn't like the that sun. Video like too much.
You did it. Why?
This is sorry, Mr. Chan. This is the monster that you created. So you can't. It's not as if he hatched out of a Pokemon ball and not want to be responsible in life.
I think maybe what
is and I'm speaking for Chan
I'm speaking
saying.
For 95% of the people who side eye their parents and go. Come on, do I really have to work? When your father is now of means and doesn't want to leave you a thing, no,
never.
I don't agree.
You know what I do understand from what Jackie Chan is saying? There's a tension in how you are allowed to, as a parent, how far you are allowed to exert yourself and your power over your children. You know, so we grew up with our parents having all the power. You couldn't talk back.
That's right.
You know, you couldn't say this. You had to do what they said. You had to. And now we live in an enlightened age that says you actually have to get consent from your children. You have to, they have to participate.
Oh, now your kids are in charge. And by the way, they will judge you by what the internet tells them and a whole lot of other stuff. So you are suddenly, as a parent, you're about the third most powerful person in their life, because there are other places they can go. They can talk to their friends at 3 a.m. You know, I mean, even parents who set very strict rules.
And they also have leverage.
Let's just take a second to also break it down from the point of view that Jackie Chan might be coming from. And I hear you, Sia. I think we have terrible parents in the world. And I would say at least half and probably more of the parents that live today are shit parents. You know, we've got these helicopter parents. We've got these parents who can never see fault in their children. Well, not you, Pumi. Don't worry. I've watched you with your son. You have, you can be strict as hell. What I'm saying is that kids get away with whatever they want now. But what Jackie Chan might be saying is that America, because it seems to me he was also making a critique on how hard it is to raise a child in America where there are no traditional values. And, you know, we've spoken about tradition quite a few times. In fact, the last time Pumi was on, we were talking about the Zulu king and the tradition of kind of respecting your elders and all of that stuff. So I like that. I really like the idea that those traditions are valuable. They are tested by the many generations that have come before. And no matter how we think we're so much better and so much more evolved, and we've got technology that they didn't have, and we have information they didn't have, but if there isn't basic respect and there isn't an appreciation for some of those traditions in certain cultures, and I mean, America is the best example, right? Because what do people have? Religion's kind of out of the window for a lot of people. And this is coming from someone who is himself a critic of religion a lot of the time. Good old values of, like, you know, the family values of respect and, you know, and hard work and all of that stuff. He's saying that doesn't exist.
But, you know, so they are, I think, all those values still can be instilled in children, but with a little bit of kindness.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you ever see on TikTok. I mean, TikTok is full,
I've never been on there.
It's so full of people who are emulating like their black mom. And I'm just going to say the black mom because I'm not sure about white moms.
Okay.
And it's every time I see it, you know, I get a little bit of like PTSD because I see all those scenarios when your mother, it's like Saturday morning and your mother's been doing the washing. She just walks into your room to like pack the stuff and you're just still like, I'm still sleeping. And she's like, what? You are in my house. You are still sleeping at this time. But all of those things, it's a bordering on, you know, it's too hard. You don't have to be that harsh. You can, you can set a clear set of rules that say, listen, everybody wakes up by 8 o'clock or whatever, and then stick by it. You know, then you can still be kind and still instill that kind of discipline.
You've got experience of this.
Have to be, it's my house.
I know. But you see, you are a mom and Sia and I are not. So we only have our own parents to go by. So we're already in our heads. We're one generation back from you, which is why Sia's like, these parents don't know what they're doing. But also, Sia,
why I'm not going by my parents.
Yeah, no, you're strict, right? They didn't let you get away with stuff.
They've done a good job. Look at you. They kept you alive until you could start keeping yourself alive.
But also, Sia knew that, you know, there were a whole lot of girls in the family who were already going to put him in his place if his parents didn't. I mean, really, your sisters didn't let you get away with shit, right?
Well, yeah, everyone did in the house.
So if you were disappointing, I mean, they kept trying with girls until they eventually got you, and you know. You couldn't afford to be disappointing. That's the fact. I just want to play you. Let's just play this Jackie Chan clip because I think it, you know, a lot of people might not have seen it. And it's long, but listen to this. I think it'll be interesting. So here's Jackie Chan.
No, it's interesting.
Hey, you hit me. I sue you.
Yeah.
Even the mom, you cannot hit the children. I'm going to sue you.
Yeah.
And all day, the teacher just, you know, we sit there, nothing to do. The teacher, good morning, teacher. Then he look at me, come. Then I walk. No, go back. You know, they just, no reason. Hit for you, no reason.
But is that good?
Good.
Yeah?
Of course. For the Western is not good.
Uh-huh.
But my personal, I like this kind of training. Because my teacher, so tough. So this why, Samuel Hong Yuan Bell, me, we all, the team, we so disciplined.
Yeah.
I can go home, put my shoes like this. I take off my clothes. I can float them. Even in the hotel, I mess something, I will clean it up.
Yeah.
My son, okay? I never see the shoes put like this.
Yeah.
One on the floor, one in the dining room.
Yeah.
Wearing the white shoes, running around. Because he don't wash his own shoes.
Socks. You give him a shot?
No, I can't.
No?
He sue me. When I see the old people like this, we get up, we bow, we let the chair come. My son, you know, like this. Yeah. Then I just come. I after film, 6 months, 9 months, I filming. After filming, I go home. I open the door. And, hi there, how are you? When I see my dad, I get up. You know.
Right.
Oh, take the tea, like this.
Right.
This is.
Your dad was a tough guy, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a traditional Chinese culture, you know.
And you see value in that.
Because my son was a school in the U.S.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what he.
Yeah.
First of all, I mean, just watching that, I kind of wonder if his son was watching, because that's so embarrassing. His dad just basically said he's a complete loser on TV.
He's a brat. He's a brat.
Yeah, he's a brat.
No.
You don't agree,
he's just, he's your run-of-the-mill kid who I think is beyond entitled to some fraction of the Jackie Chan dynasty. Like, Jackie Chan has been around since the beginning of time, in my opinion. And so he has oodles and oodles of money. And if I have grown up as a Chan, excuse me, I need some money. How dare I? Who's going to pick up my shoes? Or who's, okay, well,
right.
Look, I'm joking and I'm being extreme.
I know
but
what you mean.
You can't just tell me that.
I don't think
you can't
being
tell me I've grown up as a Chan and then as soon as my father dies, I have to move out of this house and then I now have to.
Mm.
No. Mm-mm. It's you made this monster, Jackie. I'm sorry.
Well, Steph agrees with you, CS. Steph says, I agree. It is your son, Jackie. Sort it out. Onkopotse says, you must beat the children. You see, this is like some traditional values putting in there from Onkopotse.
Children and then also stand up for the repercussions of that.
Steph is on fire this morning because Steph is also saying these problem children usually grow into normal adults. I don't know about that.
But he should have moved out by now. He should have moved out by now, made his own life, found his own thing in life. If he if he was looking like he's trying, not just waiting for his dad's stuff. Like, what?
Yeah,
that is
make an
right.
effort. Earn it. Live up to it. You know, I mean, we've been talking a lot about Prince Philip since he died. Just like when we were talking about, you know, King Goodwill and Prince Philip, this guy was born into a life of privilege, but he also, you know, there was some deprivation when he was a kid because they kind of lost everything. And his dad did go off with the mistress and live in the south of France. His mother did go mad, but he was a prince. So he could have been born into a world where he didn't have to do anything except be a prince. And he could have lived this life of like a playboy, But the guy was reading every day. He learned to fly. He learned to sail. He learned to read. He learned to write. He learned to do.
They also sent him to that school that was made to, like, the
correct,
whole premise
to toughen
of the
him
school
up.
Is
yeah.
to toughen up.
Well,
to toughen up
it's
children born of privilege.
So that guy who started that school is a guy called Kurt Hahn, and he believed that it wasn't so much just education that made a kid. And, you know, if you compare this to what a lot of schools do now, I think there's huge merits in this. He said, you need to develop character, not just come out clever. He said, it's fine to learn mathematics and science and English and, you know, history and all of those things. Those are important things to learn as subjects. But he says, what you want is to come out of my school with character. You want to have a personality. You want to have a backbone. You want to have a hard work ethic. You want to have all. Now who's teaching kids?
I would send my child to that school.
I would too.
Send my child to that school.
I would too. Who's teaching kids?
Yes, yeah.
Who's teaching kids that at the moment? Like, who's teaching kids how to have a work ethic? You know, they have to buy a business book with Richard Branson on the cover. And trust
your
me.
Your parents should.
They should.
Your parents do, and your parents try, but it needs to be reinforced. It needs to be reinforced in the peer environment.
Yeah.
Like, don't take me there with this.
It
needs to be reinforced in the peer environment. If you're the only person whose parents are enforcing all of those things in your life, you're very likely to rebel against it because you're like, nobody else lives like this. Nobody else lives like this. This doesn't work for anybody else. So it's hard for you to kind of stick to it.
But especially
in a school environment where everybody around you has the same set of rules, you don't feel like the odd one out. Mm. This is just how children are, especially teenagers.
I think it's a good point. Pumi's a mother, Sia. You can pull that face as much as you like, but she's got real experience in this. And Busit Sana says...
I'm a child. I also have experience in this.
Busit Sana says she agrees with Jackie Chan. He's not lying. Straight facts. Linda says...
Straight facts, Busit.
Linda
Straight
says,
facts.
And this is the point that brought on this conversation. Linda says, we live in a time where it's easier to replace something than it is to fix it, relationships included. That is true. You know, instead of fixing the shovel when it breaks, because I remember when I was growing up, we had one spade and one shovel, and those things were masking taped. They were resoldered. The handle of the thing became shorter and shorter. We didn't throw it out and go and buy a new one. They're like,
but
make that shit work.
It's actually,
you know,
cheaper.
Yeah, I know.
But now it's cheaper and that is part of the thing that makes you kind of go, why fix it? It's cheaper to just buy a new one. Just throw this one out and get a new one.
And easier, yes.
Ruth says parents are very often to blame, but they're also just human and they're trying their best. And Mzizi says, Jackie Chan said if he is capable of making his own money, he's capable of making his own money. If not, he will just be wasting mine. That's exactly right. That's what we were discussing. And Lenise says, also, parents are lazy and taking the easy road out, trying to avoid conflict. And it takes two parents with the same set of rules. Yeah, it does. It does. That's very hard. Annette, of course, agreeing with Pumi, because they are in the same category here.
Yeah.
And Tracy's making a good point. Some kids are just assholes.
This is a true story. Tracy, yes.
Okay, operative term there being some.
Yeah, some kids.
I wouldn't say most. I'd say some.
Sergio.
Although there is an age group where they most are.
Yeah, no. Certainly, like, when they're about three, they are all mostly assholes. And when they're teenagers, they're all mostly assholes. So Sergio says something interesting here. He says private schools are part of the problem with these brats. Parents amplify the problem. I mean, it used to be, Pumi, wasn't it always that, and I remember this from when I was at school, I was the one on the one side, and my parents and the teachers were together on the other side. Like, they would support each other. My parents would go to parents' evenings, and they'd come back to me and unload a torrent of abuse on me. Like, your teacher says you're not working hard. Your teacher says you're back-chatting. Your teacher says you're a little shit. And I'd go like, oh, shit, there's no way I can drive a wedge between my parents and my teachers. These days, kids go home. They tell their parents, my teacher's an asshole. My teacher's this, my teacher's that. And the parents take the kids' side rather than the teacher's side.
very profuse, strongly worded email to the principal.
Yeah. Why is my child not a prefect? Why didn't my child get a participation trophy? Why didn't my child get 98 in maths, even though he only wrote half the exam? You know, parents think their kids are so perfect and they want their kids to be amazing, and they don't want to ever let them down. They don't ever want to break them down or say something that'll hurt their little fragile egos. Meanwhile, the only way you learn that stuff is to fail and to realize you're not the best and you've got to work harder. So I'm kind of with Sergio on this one. I think that's a very good point. And I think these schools, especially these private schools.
I'm not sure if it's just the private schools, though.
Pums, I think it's largely the private schools, because there's this idea that if your little preshy goes to the right school and makes the right and makes the right connections, that they'll grow up and they won't need to struggle to find jobs. And we know how a network can help, right? So a lot of parents. They think that once their kid is in the school, then they don't have to worry anymore. Their work is done.
So, you're distracting us with that, whatever you're moisturizing your lips
with. What are you moisturizing with this, Sia? What are you doing? Come on, show us. What do you got going on? Sia puts on.
I was listening. I'm not Pumi. Being distracted. Pumi. I was listening.
No, I'm distracted. Hold on. I'm distracted because Pumi needs to know this. Sia admitted he's got 7 different kinds of moisturizer the other day. I think that's just for his face, or is that for everything?
No, that's for everything.
Yes,
for everything.
7 different ones.
Jeez, Sia. Jeez.
And I still think I looked a little pale this morning. This is really bad.
Because I only had like 3.5 hours of sleep, I could not get to sleep last night. I was reading. I put down the book.
Why?
Three and a half hours of sleep.
Did you go to bed at 2?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Then you start stressing about the fact that you have to wake up soon, and the stress doesn't let you go back.
I kept trying to go back to sleep, and then I would lie there, and then you turn this way, and then you turn that way, and then I just couldn't get to sleep. So I'm gonna need to like crash at some point today. But this is the nice thing about lockdown, right? If nothing else happened, that's good. Is I can say, oh, I've got a Zoom meeting at 4 o'clock this afternoon, and actually have a little doo-doos for like an hour.
So
yes, that's my plan.
I actually, you know what? I'm so over people not being at work. People must just go back to work. People must just go back to the office, go back to work, because nobody is in a single place. You cannot get anybody to be accountable for anything because, I have to phone so-and-so, because they can't just go to their desk and check up on them. Oh, they're not answering their phone. Oh, I don't know where so-and-so is. I am so over it. I'm so over it. People must just go back to the office.
Work. You see, Pumi doesn't just.
And then they do what they.
Pumi
they
doesn't do just want to. She doesn't
I'm
just.
I'm going to sleep.
Yeah, well, listen. I'm at least admitting.
Got a Zoom meeting.
I'm admitting it because I've got nothing to hide here, and I run my own thing. So
The screen is off. The mic is on mute, mm-hmm. and you're like, "Is this person still here? Are you listening to what I'm saying in this Zoom meeting?"
I just want to quickly go to three or four comments here just to bring a little more into the discussion that Pumi and Sia and I are having this morning about parents of teachers and private schools and privilege and hard work and all that stuff. So Mfundo, who is a teacher and who worked with us at Cliff Central for a while, he's now teaching full time. He says, you can't even shout at these kids. The next day, the parent is waiting for you at the gate with a pan. Lol. Well, see?
Okay, but the pan is a little extreme.
But I'm telling you, like these parents threaten all kinds of shit if they don't get their way with the teachers. And then Riali Boja says, my parents would always tell my teachers to beat me. That's the opposite. You see, that's mine too. My dad would say to the teachers at the school, if he gives you any trouble, just hit him.
He would actually tell them to hit me.
Yeah,
now
I know.
They sue you.
I know. And it ends up on the news. Ted DeBoer says, parents aren't always lazy. So this is in contrast to what someone was saying earlier. These days it takes double the amount of work to give them lives that they deserve, leaving a lot less time available to spend with the kids because you have the graft. Yes, but again, I think that's because to open this discussion, I was saying material stuff has become so much more important. You need money so much more than anything else in this modern world. And I think maybe that's part of the problem. Anyway, we do have to leave it there, everybody. So we could come up with a couple more of the major discussions around this in a short while. But for now, we've got to get to the headlines. So let's do that straight away. You want to know what's happening in the world? Well, you come to the right place, and we're going to give you a quick look at some of the headlines, some of the current affairs, some of the things that are going on in the world that you need to be paying attention to. First of all, from News 24, a reluctant Malema confronts the SCA judge candidate over EFF Trevor Manuel defamation case. This is interesting. A reluctant. Yeah, it says in inverted commas.
Reluctant.
It says in inverted commas, a reluctant Julius Malema, a member of the JSC. I don't know how he could be on the JSC when there are so many cases that you know, he has displayed a open contempt for the independence of the judiciary, this guy. Anyway, he said on Wednesday when they're appointing judges at the moment, and he questioned SCA judge candidate Elias Matlojani over his decision to award Trevor Manuel $500,000 in damages in a defamation case against the EFF. So, of course, to Julius, it becomes personal. He found against the EFF, this judge, Matlojani, ruling that the party paid the former finance minister R500,000 for claiming he oversaw a corrupt process to appoint Revenue Commissioner Edward Kiesvetter. Of course, he didn't. It wasn't a corrupt process. They went through the evidence. The judge ruled. And listen, nobody's completely objective, but if you don't believe that the judiciary is independent and that they should be above politics and they should be able to rule in things like this, then don't have a judiciary. Just let's create a dictatorship where whoever's in charge gets to decide everything for everyone and there's no possible appeal. Anyway, Malema, who's also a leader of the EFF, admitted he was reluctant to question the judge because he was an interested party in the matter. He said, I know that Manuel is now appealing to the SCA, but they've referred that matter back to you and said there must be more oral evidence led. So whatever figure you arrive at is on the basis of that oral evidence. Matlojani said, Mark Twain said nothing spoils a good story more than the arrival of an eyewitness. The matter is pending before the Constitutional Court, and I don't think the Chief Justice is interested in my musings. So my answer to you, Mr. Malema, is that I cannot second-guess the decision that is going to be made by the Constitutional Court. Malema responded, fair enough. So in some ways,
which
I like
that. Which is a good answer.
I like that.
It was a good answer.
I think that's a good answer. I think I'm glad that it came up because it forced.
Nothing like diapile.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nothing like diapile's responses.
Yeah, I remember that. I'm prepared to go to prison, says Jacob Zuma. This is according to ENCA this morning. Former President Jacob Zuma has written to the Chief Justice saying he's prepared to go to prison. In a strongly worded letter, Zuma says he has a duty to protect his constitutional rights, even at the risk of being imprisoned. He's also accused the country's highest court of abusing its power by taking away his constitutional rights. He claims that the Zondo Commission of Inquiry has become a complex project controlled by his political foes. But when you were the political foe of so many people and you were tearing down institutions, Jacob, you didn't bring up the Constitution once, did you? Suddenly, because it's not going your way.
Yeah, because he had all the power.
Correct. So, I mean, anybody on the show this morning have a little bit of sympathy for Gedleyihle Giza? Raise your hand. No, didn't think so.
Let's just wait for maybe a few stragglers. Oh, okay, no.
No, I think we can move on. And this is interesting. Edward Kiesvetter is hitting hard. He says small tax errors can now land you with a fine or even worse, send you to jail due to legislation which has a list of minor offenses you need to avoid. These include failure to alert SARS of changes in your personal details. Yeah. If you don't update your address and your phone number and your business address and all that stuff, SARS can actually fine you or put you in jail. And if you don't keep records from previous tax years and they ask for those records, jail. He says, He says I know what you're going to say, Sia. He says many commentators with some degree of sensationalism, as well are projecting a scenario where the state will have a free-for-all against taxpayers, he said. The state must prove blameworthiness beyond a reasonable doubt. No taxpayer will be compromised in terms of their rights. But he's basically saying to you, you know what? You better make sure you're ready to pay your tax. And if you don't, we're coming to get you.
And also just wanting to get money and scare you in any way, shape, or form.
Kiesvetter is going to get you. He is going to get you. Kiesvetter is going to get you. That's what's going to happen.
There's a row there somewhere. Where's the row?
Oh, I hate SARS. I hate SARS. I really do. Now, this is so complicated, but what's going on with David Cameron? Does anyone understand this?
No.
So according to, this is from the BBC, David Cameron has said he will respond to any requests from MPs to give evidence about Greensill Capital. He is facing criticism for lobbying on behalf of the finance firm, which has recently collapsed. It sparked a wider row over private companies' attempts to influence ministers and officials. So they're basically going through what we went through when companies that were run by the Guptas were starting to influence politics in a nasty way. And obviously, I don't think theirs is on the scale that the Guptas was on, but maybe it was. Maybe this company, Greensill Capital, which seems to have gone bust, was leveraging politicians. We know this happens, right? And this is awkward for Cameron because he obviously, you know, resigned as prime minister, probably thought, okay, now I can get on with my life. What happens? You're in this really interesting place when you're a former prime minister or a former president because you can influence things in the direction that you want to. You can make your influence felt, right? And he may just have overstepped the line there. Maybe he has, maybe he's done some things that are dodgy and they're going to find out. They're going to call him in. They're going to do a commission of inquiry and let's see what happens. On the other hand, he says he's got nothing to hide. So, but what politician is ever going to admit, oh, no, no, I have everything to hide. And
I'm just going to keep it hidden as much as I can.
And finally, Kamala Harris has announced that she will visit Mexico and Guatemala as part of her mission to address the root causes of immigration at the southern border. For the longest time now, people...
She's going to Mexico.
What does she always say to Joe?
We did it, Joe. Gotta be the next president of the United States.
So Kamala is, she's been avoiding going to the border and people have been giving her a very hard time in America because they've said, you know what? You should be speaking about this. You should be going to visit these people. Instead, she stayed in Washington. And now she's decided she's going to go and visit the actual countries that these immigrants are coming from. So she spoke to some reporters. She said she planned to visit the border as well. But they're going to do what they can to tackle the migrant surge. I'm going to try and do it as well as Sia, but he does it better. We must address the symptoms.
You can't do it better than Sia, guys.
No, he's got it.
Sia, man.
We must address the symptoms, and that is what is happening with a team of folks working on the border. She told reporters, her task is different. She said, our goal is to deal with the root cause, and I'm happy. I'm looking forward to be traveling in what may be hopefully my first trip to the Northern Triangle, stopping first in Mexico and then Guatemala. In March, the number of undocumented migrants apprehended at the southern border rose 71% over the previous month. It's just unbelievable what's going on there. And let's not pretend it isn't Biden's policies that is making these people think they can get across the border and making it an attractive proposition.
But it's... The root cause, I'd be interested to know what they think the root cause is.
Yeah.
I wonder if they like watch things like Narcos or read about what's happening in South America.
Right.
No, because it feels like fiction, Sia. It feels like fiction when you watch it on Netflix. But the reality is that all that South America, the economies are bad. In fact, most of their economies are premised either on a drug trade of some sort. The politicians are corrupt. People have tough lives, and the politicians are corrupt, and the gangsters are in control. People are just trying to get a better life. The root cause, and America is not blameless in the potting out of South American. Governments.
Yeah, but you hinted at something. Mexico is totally run on the drug trade and the border is controlled by these drug gangsters. So first of all, if you stop the drug war, you will already add a whole lot less pressure to that border if you stop the drug war. Number two, you've got to talk tough about these things. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are not talking tough. They're saying, if you want to come, come. Now, Trump said the opposite, and it stopped a lot of people in their tracks. They said, okay, if we're going to be arrested or our kids are going to be detained at the border or there's not going to be this catch-and-release situation, which there is now, then we're not going to take the chance. But what's happening?
Are you kind of talking about like scare tactics?
Yeah.
Scare tactics on top of policies?
It really matters what you say, what your attitude is. Like there are a lot of migrants who will take a chance anyway, regardless of what you say, right? But most people, if you say to them, listen, you talk tough, you say, if you're going to cross this border, we will arrest you, then a lot of people will be put off, or they'll think about doing it legally. Because I don't think anyone in the world has a problem with legal migration. And if you do, it's going to be very difficult for you. I mean, you know how many immigrants Japan gives citizenship to every year? Zero. You know how many people have been granted Japanese citizenship in the last 10 years? If they were born outside the country, even if they marry into someone in the country, you know how many people get Japanese citizenship? Zero.
How many?
Zero. Zero. They don't let you in, like from that point of view. So Japan has no migrant problem. They have lots of other problems. But if you say to people, sure, come on down, or don't come now, but come in a month's time, which is what the Alejandro Mahores, or whatever his name is, the secretary of the human settlements, effectively, in America at the moment. What is his name? I've just forgotten it. But
I have no idea who you're talking about.
I saw him in a news conference the other night, and he was saying, look, we want you to come, but don't come now. What you got to say to people is, if you're going to come to America, come legally. If you don't come legally, we will chase you out, we will arrest you, and we will send you back to where you came. And you've got to
be tough.
Are
you talking about Alejandro Mayorkas?
Mayorkas. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. That's the guy.
He's the United States Secretary of Homeland Security.
Thank you, Sia. Thank God I've got Sia there to fact check me and to back up the info. Anyway, look, I mean, we're not going to solve this.
Thank God I have the Googler Schmoogler.
We're not going to solve this problem. But to be honest with you, I don't think Kamala Harris going to visit Guatemala is going to solve anything either. It's all kabuki theater. It's all show. It's all putting on a show. That's what politicians most of the time do. That is the news for this morning. We got lots of other stuff on the agenda. We're going to get to the Burning Platform at 7 o'clock this morning in about 10 minutes' time. And we're going to be joined by Dumo Denga, who has been with us for a while before. He's been a regular returning champion on the Burning Platform. And that's, of course, brought to you by Nando's. It's at 7 o'clock this morning. Exciting stuff. What did I call it earlier? The Burning in Tlemesa. And then we went into a whole thing about Burning in Tlemesa and what he's up to. Be careful what you bring up, huh? I've got, before lockdown in March last year, I went to a wedding the weekend before Cyril locked the country down. And it was one of those weddings where there was no alcohol at all because there was a complete ban on alcohol already at that stage at any venues. It all had to be wrapped up by midnight, I think, was the curfew at the beginning of that. Mm. And it was the strangest thing. I mean, it was a great wedding. It was very good friends of mine. There were a whole lot of people there that I knew. But it was the last wedding I've been to. And I know that there have been people who've got married in the last year. But I haven't been to any weddings in the last year. And I'm going to a wedding on Saturday. So it'll be the first one.
Ah.
Yeah, it'll be the first one since lockdown for me. And I'm kind of excited to see how it goes.
You know, Gareth, I'm so fascinated at the number of people around you who you go to a lot of weddings, like whether it's on your Instagram.
You think so?
Fascinated.
Maybe.
Because, yeah. Maybe and I was thinking about it the other day because you kind of go into cycles, you know, our lives have cycles, right?
Yeah.
So there's a cycle when all your friends are getting married and it's all around the same time. That's because of the way that everybody matures. And then you have a whole cycle of baby showers. Then you have a whole cycle of kids parties that, you know, and I am now firmly in the teenage party scene.
Yeah. But you know what, Pums? I mean, it's like, there are a couple of reasons for that. I've always tried really hard. And I think that this was helped along by DJing for 12 years. In clubs and things, because I was forced to mix with people who were much younger than me. I also have friends who are much older than me. I mean, I can honestly tell you I have a wide range of friends. They go from anywhere in their mid-20s to their 60s and 70s. And I like to do that. I mean, I'll go. You'll see me at lunch sometimes, back in the old days when we used to just do lunch all the time or whatever it was. You'll see me sitting with like a rabbi in his 70s, and you'll think, what the hell are those two talking about? Because... No, we don't look like we don't look like we're meant to be spending time with each other. And then, you know, I'll be out with friends, and like someone who's 24 will come up and start talking to me about something. And you learn so many things if you keep your friend base wide. And also, that's probably why it looks like I've been to so many weddings. But I'm kind of picky. Hey, I don't go to all the weddings. Weddings, you have to demarcate quite a lot of time if you go to a wedding. And you don't want to do that for people that you don't like. It can be very, you have to dress up, you have to take a present, you have to, sometimes they have these incredibly irritating weddings out of the province or out of the country. And those you have to think about because the expense goes up. But I do love them because I think if you're there for someone's wedding, it's one of those moments that if those people matter to you and you matter to them, then it's kind of, it's part of your life story, you know? So I like going to those. I think Gareth loves DJing at weddings, says Corona's boring, don't alien thing. I'm sure he loves the song request. I have never DJed at a wedding. Hey, that's something I would never do.
Really?
Well, there are standard wedding playlists, and you have to play things like Celebrate Good Times, Come On.
Well, that's because weddings have such a wide range of people.
Correct.
There's like little people and very old people. Yes. And you have to play stuff that gets at least some of the people dancing of the time.
Super Hot Sticks, my pussy. You have to play.
Yeah, you can't just be drumming, basing it up.
You have to play
the whole night.
Brenda Fassie. You have to play Dexy's Midnight Runners and Come On Eileen. You have to play you do.
My brother's
Kalakata, you have to play, because then also the black people at the wedding all dance together. It's all great. I mean, like, there's a wedding playlist that everybody has.
So my brother's getting married, but we're having a traditional wedding ceremony. So we've got people who are singers, like wedding songs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not like traditional wedding songs.
That's great.
So not like Brenda Fassie stuff. Wow. Because it's the traditional aspect. It's the welcoming home of the bride that we're having.
Oh my.
It's very exciting.
But look, there must be a personal line that you draw for yourself. With me, there are two things that I just will not do ever, ever, ever. And that is, I'll never MC a party or some sort of a festival. I'm just not that person.
Yeah.
Give me a podium, a lectern, a corporate event, an agenda. If you ever see me MC a party, just know something has gone horribly wrong. To go, what's happening at the back there? Is everyone all right? Let's go to the left.
Yeah.
That will just never be me. And similarly, I've said it to my family, I'll never MC a family function. I just, also a different type of skill there. You need to be more fast-paced, punchy. They actually expect you to be funny. And I'm not, I can say things that are funny, but I don't think I'm a straight-out funny person. So I'd never do that. So DJing at weddings, I get your line.
A family function,
there.
You're not really an MC at a family function. You're more, and I keep thinking, I wonder what the English word is. But the Zulu word, you know, umkhubi wohlelo. So you're shepherding the program.
You're a convener. That's what you are. That's what that word means.
You're,
that
you're
means
shepherding
means
the program.
Mm-hmm.
Let me boil it down. That means you are teaching your aunt how to hold a microphone because she has it in her hand.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Then it opens. No. That's why I just stay away. Yeah. Those are my boundaries.
Well, while we're talking about wedding music, Chicken Dance, says Phil Stain. Claudia says Cha-Cha Slide. Oh, yeah. Lenise says, don't forget David Hasselhoff. Oy, oy, oy. Did people play David Hasselhoff?
David Hasselhoff has music?
Oh, he has lots of music, but it's horrible, horrible music. Yeah. Horrible music.
Is the music from Baywatch?
Here's an interesting one. JP said, no, it's mostly in German, Pumi, funnily enough. That's where he's a big
music.
Yeah, he's a huge music star in Germany. But the Germans, as you and I know, while they have amazing things going for them, and we're talking very stereotypically, the Germans are terrific at a lot of things. One thing that is absolutely abysmal is German music taste. So never ask Germans.
Oh, what did Rammstein ever do to you?
No, please. JP says, I invite people to my wedding who would go to my funeral. Others stay at home. Yeah, I think that's about right. You've got to draw the line somewhere, right?
And that was that.
Don't you think
that was that my thing too?
In some ways, Corona kind of forced people to make their weddings smaller and to think about who really matters. So you have to cull all the hangers on, which is not a bad thing, right? I mean, you can use Corona.
Do you remember the couple that got arrested at their wedding?
No.
I wonder what happened in KZN.
What happened?
What's in KZN? Remember that the lockdown rules were events were prohibited, and this couple had planned their event, obviously, like months in advance, whatever, and they carried on. They went ahead and had their, in some rural area in KZN, went ahead and had the event, and somebody snitched, one of those busybody neighbors, somebody snitched, called the police. The police arrived. There were pictures of the bride in her, like, white dress being shoved into the back of the... I wonder whatever happened to them. They should sue the state.
I would if they arrested me at my own wedding. I mean, you've got a story for the rest of your life, right? That's going to be a really good story when your grandkids come along. You'll be like, what happened to you at your wedding, Grandma? Well, the government arrested us. That's a good story. This is a couple of things quickly before we wrap up this hour. Thank goodness for live stream weddings. It's saving us all time and money.
What?
People do this. I mean, we've all seen a live stream funeral, right? But Lee says...
Yeah, a funeral makes sense, right?
Lee says she's been to a live stream wedding. I'd love to know.
I wouldn't go to a live stream wedding.
Steph says, yes, reminds me of the wedding singer. Well, all those songs are the same songs at any wedding. That is true. And Ruth has a point to make about something that only me and Mohoeng care about. But today is Yom Hatzmaut, which is the celebration of Israel's independence. So if anybody is a supporter of Israel as I am, then that's a day worthy of celebration. So it's really just me and Mohoeng. Ruth, don't expect too many other people to join our little party. I'm sorry. Okay. This is from yesterday. You missed this, Pumi. There was some action yesterday on the show. But Tabo says, I finally got to see Sia's face during Gareth and Damon's fight yesterday. Priceless. Yes.
You guys. Yes. Guys, man. You mustn't.
Yes.
No, don't get involved with this woman anymore. Just don't.
It was a
actually,
good
they're
fight.
Fine.
I can't believe
the
this
two of them are fine. They like it.
You know, it's like when you have those siblings who just get on each other's last nerve for any reason. You guys.
No, Damon got.
Why can't we all just get along? Why can't we all just get along?
Damon got so hysterical and crazy yesterday. I had to chase him off. I cut him off the show. And then later on, when things had calmed down, he came back and I said, you know what, you're welcome back, Damon. And he apologized and he said, yeah, I did kind of lose it, but it was fun. It was really good to listen to. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I listened back yesterday and I was laughing. So, all right, it is 7 and it is time for us to get on with the burning platform, which is next. CliffCentral.com. Pumi Mashiko is with us and we will be joined by Dumo Denga, and it's all brought to you by Nando's next. CliffCentral.com.